Welcome to episode 264 of the Family Podcast Network. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the principles that the Arbinger Institute implements that I think have a huge impact in how we can parent kids and not only figure out why are kids not doing those things that we want them to do or why is it that we have those little behaviors that just won't go away. Stay tuned for that and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network, here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent. There is always something we can do to take our parenting to the next level. The date today is November the 11th, 2013. It's the beginning of the week, Monday. That's right. Our topic for today is Week in Review and how it applies to you. That's right. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the conference that I've been at. Not only is it single-handedly the best conference I have ever been to, how it has a practical application for you guys as parents that you are going to want to know. I'm telling you, you're going to love this stuff. Before we get into that, let's jump into some real quick housekeeping. Guys, also don't forget, if you want to stay tuned of all the new stuff that's going on, jump over to The Family Podcast, enter your name and your email address in the right-hand side, click submit. You'll get put on a list to make sure that you never miss out on any episodes. Also, don't forget, if you guys want to become a supporting member of the Family Podcast, you've been listening long enough that you're like, man, I love this stuff. I love what I'm learning. I love the people that get brought on here. We really want to support the show, Trey. Simple, easy way to do that. Go to thefamilypodcast.com and click PTacker or become a member at the very tippy top. Whenever you do that, it'll put you in there. If you feel like you're getting three dimes out of every episode, sign up and consider supporting the show. Guys, if you want to contact us. A lot of ways you can do that. You can always email me at treygibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. That is one of y'all's favorites that y'all can do. You can also go to the contact page over on the Family Podcast. You can also touch base with me over at Facebook, or if you're on thefamilypodcast.com over on the right-hand side, if you click on that ashtray question, you can record a voicemail just as though you were doing it into a phone, except you'll do it on your computer so long as you have a microphone, or you can call us at 661-PARENT-0. Again, that number is 661-PARENT-0. Leave us an email with your question or a voicemail with your question. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. All right, guys. We're talking about trimming this daggum housekeeping down, so let's jump into our topic for today. Before we get into it, which is going to be a week in review and how it applies to you, I want to take you through a little old segment that we haven't resurrected in a little while.
Oh no, oh no, oh no, yo, 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 oh no, you didn't, 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 didn't you, oh no. What you owe me, so now it's over for you.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to pull back a little bit of the oh no you didn't parenting. That's right. This is the segment where we talk a little about a parent that did something that you can't help but go, oh no, you surely didn't.
Oh no, you didn't.
So let's bring in an article that I found today. This was actually sent to me by a listener, because they absolutely just could not believe that this had happened. And I get those a lot. And I'll be frank with most people. I read stuff like this, and I'm like, yeah, no. I mean, that's pretty common. I mean, you got to realize some of what I did was steeped in the background of therapy. And so I saw things that I don't care to talk to people about if I don't need to. So when these kind of articles are submitted, they really don't faze me. But this is actually one that caught my attention as extra special. So listen to this. Man sued his ex-wife over having ugly kids, and he won. His ex-wife was ordered by a court to pay him $120,000 in this bizarre case. The story started out with a man suing his wife because she gave birth to an ugly baby girl. But once a DNA test proved that the child was his, he sued her for having ugly children. He did this on the grounds of false pretenses after finding out that his ex-wife's beauty was due to plastic surgery before they met, according to Fox Friends First on Friday, November 8th. The Chicago Now radio station reports that this particular man sued his wife when she gave birth to an ugly daughter. He accused her of having an affair and when the child did not look like him or his wife. When the DNA test came back, naming him as the father, the wife then came clean. Apparently, she actually had $100,000 worth of plastic surgery in South Korea before the couple had ever met. So anyway, this goes on to say that he really did sue her for having unattractive children, and he actually won. And, I mean... No, you didn't. Yeah, no, he sure did. He really actually sued his wife because she had ugly babies. I mean, what a hurtful place to come from. You know, don't get me wrong. I don't have a problem. You know, when my kids were first born, I looked at them and it was just when they first came out, it was like, goodness gracious, they look like aliens. You know what I mean? And so, I mean, I understand there's some of that, that they don't always look the best, but, you know, to me, they're, oh my gosh, we're just missing what is so much more important than what do they look like? What's going on inside their hearts? What's going on inside their hearts? And to me, this absolutely is missing. And don't get me wrong, I don't mean any ill will towards this gentleman. I mean, I'm sure he's doing the very best with what he was taught, but oh man, I really don't care for him. What I care for is, are these kids ever going to figure this out? Are they ever going to read this article one day and see this? I don't know. It just breaks my heart to see this. But anyway, I don't want to perseverate on that. Let's go ahead and jump into our topic for today, which is a week in review, how it applies to you. If most of you guys don't know, for the majority of last week, I left last Tuesday, and the majority of last week I've been at a conference here in Utah. And it's particularly run by the Arbinger Institute. I spent the last week doing one version of it, and then this next week I'm going to spend the rest of this next week there as well, going through the second half of it. And so for those of you guys that are new, I know we've got a lot of new members. I see a lot of you guys popping up with statistics and whatnot, and some of you guys have become really regular listeners, and I can watch a little bit of that. And so some of you guys may not be necessarily aware, or maybe you've been listening for a while, but you're not really aware, but Family Podcast Network is actually founded on the principles that we're going to talk about today that actually came directly from Arbinger. Now, those of you guys who know my buddy and my co-host for the Real Family Guys podcast here on Friday, his name is Jeff. And he actually introduced me to this. He was like, man, Trey, you got to read this book called Leadership and Self-Deception. It's amazing. You're going to read it. Well, I read it and fell in love with it. And now up until that point, I had been teaching parenting classes. We're talking like in office, a group of people teaching parenting, you know, lessons for a little while now. And I had found that I'd fallen in love with it. But one of the overarching questions that kept coming back, there's kind of two of them that kept coming back. But one of the ones that parents had for me is, Trey, these are great techniques you're teaching me, but I'm going home and they're not working. And some would have fantastic success. And another one would go home and have horrible success. And they could not figure out why. And they were so frustrated. So they typically did one of about three things. One, they would either blame me and say that my technique sucked. Well, I mean, we know that's not true because some people were having success with them. If that didn't work, then they kind of lost overarching belief systems in parenting training in general, right? Which that's another big thing that we don't want. We don't ever want to do this in a way that people have, you know, failures and then think, man, this parenting thing just can't get any better than this. It's just going to really, really, really stink for the rest of their lives, right? Or the third thing is they begin to believe that they're a horrible parent. And all three of those are equally dangerous. They're equally a problem, and they're all something that we wanted to address. So Family Podcast really is built upon two questions. Number one, the most important question is, how do we parent excellently? And we're talking about like in terms of virtue. How do we practice excellent parenting? Now, when I'm saying that, I'm not talking about good parenting. One of the things that we say here at Family Podcast all the time is, what is the number one enemy to excellent parenting? Most people will think, well, really bad parenting, poor parenting, and that is not the answer. The number one enemy to excellent parenting is good parenting. Those parents that do just enough for their kids not to die, you know, just enough for their kids to not get punched in the face or blown up with a bazooka by mom and dad, right? They do just enough to get them out of high school. It's good. It's a good job. I did a good job as a parent. And I believe that in most cases. But my question always is, for these parents, are you doing the best job you could have? See, that's the deficit right there. What is it that causes us to only be good parents? What causes us, guys, I want you to hear me say, I operate a lot in a good parenting mode. And my overarching goal in myself, my goal with working with anybody is to see, can we get it ourselves as a community together, me, you, everybody, can we take that parenting to the next level? The second question that FPN seeks out to ask is why are great techniques not working? When we know and understand human behavior as good as we do, and we have neurological and research and studies that are coming out the wazoo that are so good and empiric and peer-based, they're great articles that are showing all these things, and they should be working, but they're not. Why? Why is that? Those are the two questions that Family Podcast Network wants to ask. How do we take this show from just being a great show to get parenting advice to let's figure out why great parenting advice is not working with people? So I began to piece these things together. I began to realize there was a lot more to good parenting, education, or whatever else, de-stressing parenting, than just technique. And it had to do with this one concept. How do we see our kids? So what do you mean, Trey? Well, I see them as, you know, xenomorphic beings or whatever. I see them as tangible humans with flesh and epidermis and dermis and internals and whatever else. I mean, I see that, right? That's not what I mean. What I mean when I say, how are we seeing our kids? What do you see them as? If you had to describe them in a word, what would it be? Are they turds? Are they disrespectful? Are they whiny? Are they sneaky? Are they wonderful? But sometimes they are fill in the blank. Or maybe it's that, Trey, I think my kids are amazing. They're fantastic and they're great. But you know, every so often when we're at Walmart, or every so often whenever I tell them they can't have a toy, or every so often when I tell them to come here right now, it's when we see them in that moment. And most of the time they're really amazing, but you know, in that moment, they act like little fill-in-the-blanks. If you like my totally science-based, you know, word of So whenever we're in the middle of Walmart and they're screaming their heads off, how are you seeing them in that moment? Whenever they're acting up in church and fidgeting and fussing around and everybody you know is looking at you, how are you seeing them in that moment? Whenever they're upset with you as teenagers and they're frustrated to all get out and they roll their eyes at you, how are you seeing them in that moment? So the goal isn't, and it can't be, techniques alone. Because the reality is, you can do any technique, any behavioral technique that you want from a bad place, right? Well, no, I don't think so. Sure you can. You ever had somebody apologize to you that didn't mean it? I'm sorry. You know what I'm talking about? And you're deep down in your nuggets, you're like, there's no way this is real. You know what I mean? You're just like, you know that is them walking through it. And either they're doing it because somebody else told them to, or they're doing it because they think that they're supposed to. They're not doing it because they experience genuine sorrow. Right? We sniff through that crap really easily. Most of us do. If the care that you feel you show your kids is ever disingenuous, non-authentic, your kids sniff that stuff out quicker than anything. One of the ways that the Arbinger Institute worded it that I really did enjoy is that our facilitator said that people have a tendency to be able to smell. He called it smelling. People can smell when things aren't authentic. And I think he's right. I think we come built in almost with that inherent ability to tell when people are being genuine with us. And kids are in a lot of ways better than we are at it, because they go off of the real deal, and we often have a tendency to look at the wrong cues. And so I think kids are often even better at it than we are. But the reality is that for some reason, and me as well, but I think we as a people, we're drawn to techniques. We're drawn to changing behaviors. We call that behavioral modification typically. But we're drawn to this. Why is that? I think it's because it's easier to see. You know, it's a tangible version of what's going on deep down inside. And so it's easy to focus on behaviors. If I can just change the way I'm acting towards somebody, it'll fix everything. My wife, and I have her permission to share this, my wife has allowed me to share this because she's been at that point where she'll call me and say, Trey, I need your parenting advice. And she'll go through the different situations, and I'll give it to her, and she'll come back and say, it's not working. And the reality behind it is because she likes techniques because they're easy to see, but if it's not coming from the right place in the heart, even if you authentically desire to love on your kid and take care of them, but there's that frustration inside still, kids can tell. And they don't respond well to it. So we like technique because you can see it easier. You can quantify it easier. Well, I spent this entire day doing everything that I was supposed to as a parent. I did this, I did that, I did this like I was supposed to. I did everything that Trey suggested about this, and he still doesn't listen to me. Did you hear my tone? How do you think I feel about this kid? How is my way of seeing about this kid based off of that tone that I just used? Is it in a good place? Or am I angry and frustrated? And how do we typically see kids whenever we're angry and frustrated? So even though people are drawn to this technique, I think we all acknowledge that there is a deeper level to all of this. Again, going back to the idea of the authenticity of our statement versus the unauthenticity, right? The apology. Somebody comes to us and does something that's supposed to be an authentic thing, but, well, I'm sorry. You know what I mean? I mean, we can read through that junk quick, fast, and in a hurry, right? We figure that kind of stuff out. But there's no doubt that single-handedly, this deeper level that we're talking about here is the most difficult to figure out. So it comes down to this. And this is kind of the Arbinger principle here that we've adapted throughout Family Podcast for the last 2 years. There's two fundamental choices that we have whenever we respond to our kids with anything. Whether it's, Mom, Dad, can I spend the night at so-and-so's house? Mom, Dad, I'm pregnant. Mom, Dad, y'all drive me nuts. Whatever it is, there's two different ways that we can respond to kids. Always. There's always two ways. Number one, we can respond to them in a way that indicates that we think other people count, that they're real to us. Their feelings, their emotions, all of that stuff. The second way is that we respond to them in a way that we indicate that others don't count. So when we think about it, any behavior, anything that we do with our kids, any way that we respond to them or react, depending on what kind of thing we're talking about here, it comes out of those two places, right? Number one is that the others count, right? What we're trying to say is that whenever we're responding to a person, other people count the way that we count, right? When we respond to people that way, people have a tendency to be more open. It invites cooperation. We are seeing them as a person who is real, and they have emotions and feelings and things that they want and desires and things that they want to get to, just like we do. Arbinger, I think, words it the best I've ever seen. They word it like this. They say that when we're seeing somebody like this, when we're seeing somebody in a way that we think they count, we are being, and I quote, responsive to people's humanity. That the reality is we are looking at them and we are saying you are a person. And I think we're like, well, yeah, of course, everybody's a human. Of course we see that. But if you take a look at things like political debates, that's a great place to start with it. Political debates, Republicans versus Democrats. And do you see how many of them respond to each other? How do you think they're seeing them? I mean, are they going to walk up to their house and shoot them in the face with shotguns or anything crazy like that? No, probably not. Some of them might. But most of those people that are in the middle of these fights between Republican and Democrat wouldn't do that. But I'll ask you this. When they're sitting there saying some of the statements that they say, are they seeing them as humans? I mean, I would argue no, they're not. They're not being responsive to people's humanity. They're not seeing that other Democrat or that other Republican as somebody who counts the way I count. Well, I count because I'm Republican, but you don't count because you're Democrat, right? The flip side to that is, the other thing that we can do is that we see people as objects. Right? Objects don't count, right? I'm looking at a chair right now. I'm looking at a chair with a pair of my jeans that are drying out because I had to wash clothes today. And I'm looking at my chair. You suck, chair. I really hate your guts. Does that chair care? No, it doesn't. It doesn't care that I just said that. Why? Because it's an object. It's inanimate. It's not human. It doesn't have emotions or feelings, at least none that we're aware of. So it doesn't matter. And when we're not careful, we have a tendency to do this to people and our kids especially more than anybody else. We start to see them as though they don't count like we do. And it invites people to resist us. It invites our kids to fight against us. And sometimes we can't figure out why we can't reach them. But when we're seeing them as an object, we have three different ways that, you know, that we're conceptualizing a person who's an object. Number one is they're a vehicle. Let's start with obstacle. Number one, they're an obstacle. There's something that I have to get over, right? They're a thing that's in my way, and I need to get over them or past them because they're an obstacle, right? The other one is a vehicle. Number two is a vehicle. We see them as something that is going to gain us something by them doing something or being there or saying something or whatever else it is. They're going to get us something else, or they're irrelevant. They just don't matter. You see, this is the mentality that is resistant to people's humanity. So let's take an example of before I left. Before I left, I was getting packed up and getting ready to leave for this conference. And I had a lot of stuff to pack. I mean, I had almost 8 days worth of dress clothes that I had to wear, that I had to have prepped and ready, as well as all the extra trimmings, basically, right? And so it's a big ordeal to get packed up. And I think we talked a little bit about my ILBE, right? But we may actually have brought this example up before, but when I was getting ready to leave, I was my kids had come in there, and I was starting to get packed up that evening and whatnot. And my kids came in and said, "Oh, Dad, will you come and watch a show with us?" Because one of the things we do is we let them watch a show, and they wind down, and they fall asleep typically watching their movie. And they said, "Dad, can you come watch a movie with us?" I said, "You know what? I bet we can probably do that, kids." And they said, "Okay, cool." And they went around there, and they climbed in bed, and I tucked them all in, and I walked out. And normally they will ask me, and they forgot to ask me, "Dad, are you going to come watch a movie with us?" And I was able to quote-unquote slip out, right? Now, my insides told me the right thing to do was to get done tucking him into bed and to crawl up there with him and watch a TV show with him. But you see, I betrayed that sense. I didn't listen to it. I said, no, I got to get packed up, right? So what did I naturally begin doing? I began justifying, well, I've got to get this done. It's late. I don't want to be up too late. I got to have some, I got to wake up early because I got to get there early to the airport and get dropped off and all this other stuff. So there's no way I can do all this stuff. So I began walking through all this thing, right? So what was I seeing my kids as? As I walked out of there, as I was leaving my room and I went through my mind, crap, I should lay with them. And I said, and I began to justify myself, right? What was I seeing my kids as? An obstacle, a vehicle, or irrelevant? For those of you out there that said an obstacle, you got it. You're right. They were an obstacle to me getting to bed early. They were an obstacle to me getting my packing done. They were an obstacle to me not being tired when I got up in the morning. But deep down inside, like Trey always says, I knew it, my nuggets. I knew it was right. You see, I knew the right thing was to get my little happy butt back in there and lay down with those kids and spend that time with them. It's a decision I've regretted very, very much so. I've been very convicted about that the last few weeks. Not like, oh, I'm a horrible father, not like that, but just, I know now, that was the wrong choice. So let's change it up. This isn't necessarily the same thing, right? But let's change this up and talk about, okay, well, I get obstacles, Trey, and I think most people are drawn to these, but let's talk about some of the other ones. Vehicle. So let's say my kid said, Dad, come and lay with us, right? And so then I started, I did that, and I got him shut down. I started thinking about walking out, but I thought, oh, you know what I could do? I could just sneak back in there, and I could lay down with him, maybe take a little picture of me laying with him, and then I can post that up to the family podcast and show everybody how I laid with my kids and did this, right? Am I seeing them as an obstacle, a vehicle, or irrelevant? For those of you guys who said vehicle, boom, you got it. What am I seeing them? I'm seeing them a vehicle to make me look like a better daddy. I see them as a vehicle that makes me appear as though I've got this parenting thing together. Whatever it is, they're a vehicle to me. Guys, by the way, I don't do that. I really don't stop and think, oh, I'm going to do this to make myself look amazing, right? I promise that's not the way I operate. But I won't tell you that I don't ever do this with things, treat people like vehicles. So let's take that same mentality, right? And let's just say that I've just been blowing and going. I've been packing and packing and packing. And because I've been so busy, the kids just haven't even got an opportunity to talk to me, right? They haven't even got the opportunity to ask me because I'm just so busy packing, I don't have time to sit down and even give them a moment to ask, right? Do I see them as an obstacle, a vehicle, or as irrelevant? Now, some people could argue, it still might be an obstacle, but let's just say I'm not even thinking about all that stuff. I'm just so busy, right? What do I see them as? I see them as irrelevant. They don't count. They don't matter right now. It doesn't matter what they need. I've got it. This packing's got to get done. They're irrelevant to me. They're blended into the background, invisible. So obviously we can see that when we're seeing people as not counting, that's not what we want to be doing. Because when we do that, we invite some of the most horrible, responses from our kids that we, want. In other words, sometimes we're our own flipping worst nightmare when it comes to our kids' emotional reactions. We're the ones who invited them to be here anyway, because we haven't seen them as somebody who counts, as somebody who matters. So conversely, you have to conclude that the best way out of these two is to see our kids as though they count, as though they matter, as though the things that are important to them matter. Even if they seem, so small and petty, they still matter. Their thoughts, their feelings, their ideas, even the choices that they want to make, they matter. And some of us, we get this idea. We get this idea. And people are like, okay, I think that's true. But they get this kind of mixed up, erroneous idea, this wrong idea, that if we're seeing our kids as though they count, Trey, aren't we being kind of fluffy with them? It's always complimenting them and telling them they're getting them right and never tell them that they're doing it wrong. And then if we're seeing them as though they don't count, that means we're being hard on them and that, we're being, rough and tough and that tough love and all that kind of stuff, right? Isn't that the way it is? No, that's absolutely not correct. Because the reality is, we can correct our kids. Let's take correction or discipline or whatever you want to call it. We can correct our kids softly. But you know, think about it. I mean, you can compliment somebody without seeing them as a person, right? You know, so imagine a manager is at your work, and he's starting to walk up, or maybe and they're getting close, right? So you walk over to somebody else, and you compliment them and say, "Oh, you're so awesome!" Right as the boss is walking by, because you got this, you want him to see you as being the very complimentary worker or manager or something like that, right? Are you complimenting them from a good place? Are you complimenting them as though they matter, as though they count? Are you complimenting them as though they don't count, as though they don't matter? They're a vehicle to you. See what I'm saying? It's not the behavior to focus on. It's not the techniques that we can do that matter in these cases. It's where they come from, the motivation, the intrinsic inside of you that says, "I'm doing this because of these reasons." Actually, typically you're not even saying that. But it's the thought process that's going on inside of you. So I think my fundamental takeaway from this week is this question. How am I being a problem for my kid? That doesn't mean I'm the source of all problems. It doesn't mean that I need to just tear myself down in some kind of depressive vortex. It doesn't mean that my kids don't do things as well that are issues. It doesn't mean that we don't ever set boundaries with kids that are doing rotten things. That's not what we're saying here. What the fundamental belief system that we're discussing here at the Family Podcast Network is, how am I being a problem for my kid? That story of the movie and not sitting down or not laying down with him before I left is actually very true. And unfortunately, I regret to say that I chose to pack my bags instead, and I let them sit in there, and they all fell asleep. But the question is, was I seeing my kids as people, or was I seeing them as objects? Now, some of you guys, out there, oh, but Trey, I know, no, you got to listen. I was seeing them as objects. You see, I needed them to be objects in that moment. You have to have them because you can't say no to them if they're human. Now, I want to be very clear on that statement. This is not saying that you can't tell somebody no and be in this place where you're seeing them as not an object. That's not what I'm suggesting. You can absolutely say no and even be in that good place when you do it. But in that moment, I knew in my knower, down in my nuggets, whatever you want to say, I knew what the right thing to do was. And the only way that I can get out of it, the only way that I can get out of doing the right thing with my kids is I must see them as an object. As needy, as whiny, as over-dependent on daddy, whatever goes through your head, as not important as my packing, I've got to do that. I've got to do it or it won't work. I can't walk around and feel like I'm an amazingly decent individual if I don't do this thing, if I don't objectify them. And that's the core principle of Family Podcast Network. You see, this week spent was just an amazing last week on helping re-solidify what it is we're doing here. Because if I can figure out how to change how I see my kids, to stop seeing them as those objects, as somebody who doesn't really count in this moment, at least not as much as I count because my packing is more important. If I can figure out how to see my kids as equally as important as the things that I need, if I take that and then add it to really good techniques, it is single-handedly the most powerful combination in parenting you can get to. Again, I want to fall back on, this doesn't mean that you never tell your kid no. But what it does is it changes how, or maybe where in our heart we make that choice. Are we making it from a place where we're seeing our kids as objects that need to change? They're the ones who need to change. They just need to get over it because I need to pack. Or are we making that decision, seeing them as real people who has just as real feelings as me and you and us as parents? And most imperatively, are we seeing them from a place of personal responsibility where we acknowledge that I may be a good mom, but I may be a good dad, but I'm being a problem for my kid because I'm seeing him like an object. I need to see him as an object in these moments because I can't get these things done if I'm not doing that. And you betray that thing that you know is right to do. I had a mom the other day when I was talking to her about this. She said, yeah, but Trey, how do you know what's the right thing to do? When it's the right thing to do, you just do it, and that's it. But when it's the wrong thing to do, you have to justify. You have to justify, well, I mean, I don't have time. I've got to get packing. I'm going to be super duper tired tomorrow, and it's going to be a hard time to stay focused, right? Whenever we're doing the things that we know are right, we just do them, and we don't have to justify them. We don't have to say, oh, well, you know, well, we don't have to hem and haw, because we know it's right. We know deep down inside our gullets. We know they're right. But when things are not, it takes a lot of justification for us to get back to that place where we can hold that mentality of, oh, I'm such a good parent. Because you have to. You have to justify not doing the right things if you want to keep holding belief systems like that. Personal responsibility is the answer. Guys, this could not have come at any better time. You guys have got to stay tuned. This Wednesday, we're going to have just a wonderful interview that Conley Ricketts and I did together, and it was amazing. But her approach on this all is maybe making those changes, seeing those changes in our kids actually begins in us. And I think she may be onto something. She's going to talk to us a lot about empathic parenting and that ability to put ourselves in our kids' shoes. Because when we put ourselves in our kids' shoes, it is very, very difficult for us to continue to see them as objects. So make sure you stay tuned this Wednesday for our next episode of the Family Podcast Network. It's going to be a wonderful interview. You got to come check it out. Well, guys, that's all that we have for this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that are. And once again, don't forget to join us this Friday or this Wednesday for our interview with Conley, as well as this Friday where Jeff and I, actually, I take that back. We will not be doing an episode this week. Jeff and I are going to take off since I'm going to be actually flying back that day. I won't be available for recording for the next few days. So you guys enjoy these next two episodes, and if nothing else, we'll see you guys on Wednesday.